Hello and welcome to Talking Arts Podcast. My name's Brad Diedrich and I'm here with Wendy Chai and with Natasha Daniloff. Hello, Natasha. How are you?
Hi, well pronounced.
I made it. We're continuing our series of podcasts, Talking Art Podcasts. We haven't been holding live events as we normally did last year, but this year we've been still continuing the podcast, talking to local Blue Mountains artists and artisans. And today we're talking to Natasha about her work, and so I'll hand over to founder and visual artist Wendy Chai. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Brad. Hi, Natasha.
Hello, Wendy. Thanks for inviting me. It's very exciting.
Oh, no, it's great that you could come. And I've really enjoyed doing a bit more background work on finding out who you are as an artist and what you've been doing. So it's a delight for us to have you here.
Oh, thank you.
So welcome, everybody. And I hope you really enjoyed this podcast with Natasha. I'm sure you will. We would really encourage you to have a look at Natasha's work on her website, which is natashadaniloff.com.au.
Yes. No, just dot com. Shows you how long ago I looked at it.
Go and have a look and admire her work. We might be able to put some of her work up on the website so you can have a look as well.
We will. We'll put some of the work up on Talking Arts, and we'll also put lots of links to your website.
Instagram's good too. I use Instagram a lot.
Yeah.
So well, do you use it like a portfolio?
Yeah, I do. Yeah,
I do. A lot of people do.
Yeah, you won't find too many cat images on that, fortunately. Right. But it is, yeah, the latest work.
Nothing wrong with cat images if you're a cat painter.
No. I don't paint them, I don't keep still long enough.
Well, look, that's a really good place to start because I follow Natasha and I'm constantly amazed with these images that you keep posting. I know you've done some recent ones. You found a place out at Orange.
Oh, Thompson's Road. Yes, yeah.
But before, look, we won't explore that yet, but I'll give everybody the advantage of getting a bit of background to Natasha, and then we'll get Natasha to talk about her work from her point of view, and then we'll get into a little bit of conversation about how the whole bushfire pandemic affects the whole art making process, because I'm sure everybody's feeling it in different ways, and it's really good to hear from artists how they're managing that.
Or mismanaging.
Yeah, well, I would come in the mismanaging category, I think. Anyway. Look, I've really been enjoying you posting your images on Instagram. I'm just admiring how you work with landscape because you're a plein air painter, or drawing.
I focus mostly on drawing. I find that the easiest thing. I've tried painting a bit, but I think the oil painting technique seems to doesn't work. It doesn't work for me. It works for me in the studio, where I can be a bit more thoughtful, methodical, planned. And I've got all my materials around. I mean, I have too many materials for a start.
Okay.
But drawing works for me because I just go out with some paper.
Yes.
And usually it's old paper, the stuff that hasn't worked before. I never throw anything away, so my studio is dreadful. And I usually wash it off or gesso it over. Sometimes I'll have a mixture of different size sheets, and some paper will be completely fresh. And I'll just go out there with charcoal and ink.
Okay.
And I'll pick up stuff, you know, that's lying around. Charcoal pencils are great. And I just sit there and take it all in and just do it. And I work very quickly as well.
Yeah.
I don't like being cold or covered in flies. And I've worked out a system for actually working in the car as well when it's too hard to sit
too
outside.
Windy or blowy or hot. Yeah. So you're avid plein air drawer.
Yes.
So you love going out into the landscape, drawing what you see. Then what you do is take that back into your studio and you work it from there. So simple materials when you're out.
Absolutely.
And you work with old papers, old materials.
Yeah, because you're not worried about what you're going to do on it, and it really frees you up. And I've often told my students, you know, don't worry about, you know, fresh paper.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, a pristine piece, because this can be quite intimidating. And it, if you've got something that you've already kind of half wrecked, it doesn't matter. And that's when all the mark making becomes so freeing. So painting is painting, but drawing for me is like a lot of mark making. It's if you look at me talking, I'm moving my hands a lot. It's that movement of the eye and the hand, and the use of very simple materials like a charcoal pencil, or, you know, with the bushfires, you know, a chunk of, you know, charred
something
wood that you've picked
yeah.
up. Yeah.
yeah.
You know, picking up some clays, which I did at Hill End, and rubbing it into the paper. You know,
yeah.
Hill End clays are gorgeous colours, very staining too. You know, or dipping something into ink. And ink is wonderful because it just flows and
yes.
moves. And as the eye flows and moves and works into the whatever the image is in front of you, as you go into the image and out of the image and around the image, and you know
yeah.
it goes with it. And then you've got those wonderful washes, so you know, wet brush, wet hand, and just go
yeah.
over the top, and
wow.
you know, the wash happens, and yeah, it's magic. It's absolute magic.
It sounds
and
very,
very
inspiring.
Very, it's like dancing on the page.
It sounds very poetic.
I wanted, yeah, well, I grew up with poetry. My mother was
okay.
always reciting, you know, the poetry of Pushkin, Lermontov. You know,
wow.
so
they're
yes.
great.
Well, I grew up with the Russian language,
yeah.
and their poetry is very Lermontov, particularly, you know, beautiful lyric. He was a Russian romantic poet. So when you're sort of growing up with that, and because I went to Russian school, we studied Russian literature is very rich, and it is very poetic, whether it's
a very
poetic
approach to be using elements from the landscape as you draw it.
Yeah,
like
and I like
the charcoals
to think of it
that
way.
And,
yeah.
like.
And also the music, you know, to me,
yes,
there's no difference to,
absolutely.
You know, seeing my mother conducting the choir with her hand movements and me with my hand movements over the paper.
Wow.
So to me, there's no distinction between literature, art, visual arts and music. They're all
wow.
one thing. They have to be one thing.
Oh, I want to hear more about this. We're going to go.
It's a very visual description.
It's very exciting.
I'm seeing
it?
The cuts
yeah.
of, you know, your mother conducting and
yes.
you drawing.
Yeah, well,
I can
yes.
picture that in
yeah.
a
yeah.
film cut.
Well,
know?
Yeah. And you also remember that the Orthodox Church is full of icons. I
absolutely.
Grew up surrounded. I didn't have to go into a gallery. We
yes,
sang in a gallery.
The richness of all
yeah.
that imagery around you and
it's,
colour and texture.
Yeah,
and
the incense and the priest's robes and the whole liturgy is chanted. You know, it's ancient. It's
wow.
really quite ancient. And you know, it's just, it's beautiful. It's very inspiring.
So with all that, like, I wasn't aware of all that rich background that's coming into your artwork.
Mm.
Like, we're going in a different direction than I thought we would, but that's absolutely fine because
sorry.
I think this is real. No, don't apologise. I think this is wonderful.
Okay.
So how do you see, apart from the poetics of working with that medium and very... very rhythmic and very flowy. How do you see, are you conscious of that background coming out as you work?
It's me. It's yeah.
It's just
yeah,
part of...
It's a part of me, yeah. Because when you talked about before how I take the drawings and then do the paintings in the studio, what you're doing when you're drawing is you're absorbing what is around you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about recreating the image in
mm-hmm.
front of you. It's recreating the experience of actually being there. I mean, sometimes I'll go out and I'll just sit there, I won't even draw.
Mm.
And I might hear some music, or I'm, you know, the bird song is incredible music. But I've always got music in the back of my head. And then when you go take all that into the studio, you're painting that, you're capturing that experience that you had.
Mm.
It's what you're trying to do.
Which you might have missed out on if you went and were concentrating on
yes,
the drawing.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Or,
yeah, yeah. See,
yeah.
What you're trying to do in the painting and the drawing, you're holding time.
Wow. I love that.
You know, just
holding time. What a marvellous expression.
Maybe you should be right.
Yeah, be both. Be all of it. And a musician. And
I
a
do
poet.
Not. Look, actually, sometimes I can't put a body of work together until I have the right words. Like there was I had a Hill End residency, and we went to, you know, stayed at Hill End, and I was producing a body of work afterwards, but I couldn't get the point of what I was doing in the paintings and drawings until I caught the phrase through a lot of writing, so I do a lot of writing, shadows of abundance. And that became Helene to me, so that's where the painting went.
Oh, how
that's the direction it went in.
So the words gave you the cues,
the cues
to proceed with your artwork.
Yep, exactly.
How interesting.
Yep.
What an interesting connection. Because the brain is operating left, right, that sort of, I mean, even though the hemisphere, the science of the hemispheres is always changing, but it sounds very much like the making links and connections.
Oh, you're making links all the time.
Yeah.
I remember doing this, my master's, when I was doing research practices, that was a big focus of developing all of the reading that we had to do, which I really hated. Oh, my God. It was the hardest subject I've ever done. But it was so useful. Because the lecturer, I went to her crying, I said, I can't understand any of this reading I'm supposed to do. What's this bridge thing? You know, there was some description of the architecture of a bridge. What's that got to do with, you know? And she said, just read it again, because the more you read, the more neural pathways you're creating.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, wow, that's interesting. Mm. And I looked further into that. And that creating of neural pathways, by mixing language with the visual, with the movement, you're creating more connections, and that grows the brain.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
It's been proven that sort of stuff grows the brain. So, you know,
it also improves your ability to absorb that sort of information. So
the
neural brainwaves you build
will
be of a particular type that, say, will help you appreciate art or music or whatever. Because,
oh, absolutely.
As opposed
into those spheres. Yeah.
Actually, I was talking to Marlene Plummer on Sunday because I delivered my work to the Gadumba. Woohoo! A little promotion there.
Yeah, we'll get back to that.
And she was sort of saying, when she was looking at the work, she liked it, which is really great. She's saying, yeah, every time I look at it, there's something else. And I said, well, yeah, I've noticed people tell me that when they look at my work at different times of the day, it looks different. And she said, well, I don't think it's the work that's changing. I think it's the way people are thinking. You're changing the way they're thinking when they look at your work.
Wow.
So that was an interesting point to.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, I never thought of it that way. So that was another interesting point that she makes, that visual art can actually change the way people start to think.
That's a wonderful way.
I'm a big advocate of visual arts everywhere.
Let's send that sentence in big letters to the current government.
Do you see my eye roll?
Well, let's give you the full promotion of Natasha has been invited to submit a work for the Kadumba Drawing Award.
Yes, yes.
This year. So her work will be exhibited at the Kadumba Drawing Prize exhibition, which is going to be opening
this coming Saturday. And unfortunately, due to COVID restrictions, it is open by appointment.
Okay.
But that's easily, you know, like Marlene's very, Marlene Plummer's very accommodating in terms of, I mean, she wants a lot of people to come in, so,
yes.
But she's got to restrict numbers.
Okay.
And
do
she's
you know
open
what
to
those
the possibility.
Numbers are? Do you know?
20 maximum.
20
I
at
think.
A time.
Yeah, 20
yeah, yeah,
at a time. So that allows people to get a group together.
Yes.
You know, so very any art groups out there, get a few people together.
Yes.
Good. And get in touch with her and make a group booking.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
I think it's rather than just sort of, you know, drifting in.
So I know the email address for Kadumba is kadumba@aussiemail.com.au.
Yes,
I think it is, isn't it?
So you've been involved in that?
I have. I've actually got a work in the collection.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's beautiful.
which I must admit, it's quite overwhelming because it's quite a prestigious award,
yes,
isn't it? And the collection has got a lot of really top Australian.
I know. Talk about going to a panic when I was invited. My God!
But congratulations,
yes.
That's fantastic.
That's
brilliant. And Marlene Plummer, of course, is the curator and director.
Director. Yep.
Because her husband Jeffrey retired a couple of years ago, I think so. She's a whirlwind, that woman. She's just able to do everything.
I know.
So congratulations,
amazing.
Natasha. Try and get along to see that because it's a very big Australian drawing award.
It's It's supposed to be. I think John Olson said that it's one of the most significant collections of Australian drawing.
Yes, yes. And so
brilliant.
Well,
so that's down at Wentworth Falls.
Yes, yes, yeah. The grammar school. Grammar school. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. All right, how do we follow on from there?
I don't know. I tell you, you're the interviewer.
I have it to me to think about what to come up with. Because we entered in that really rich territory of
the Russian influence.
Yes. And you
well,
live
I
in
wanted
Rome.
To, as you know, I wanted to ask about,
yeah, go for it,
about
Brett,
that family
but,
history
yeah.
project
oh,
you did a
yeah,
few
yeah.
years ago.
So. Well, it started off as a proposal to Bathurst Regional Gallery. And I got Carolyn van Langenberg, the writer, to, you know, she was a friend of mine, and I exhibited, I shared gallery space with her husband. And I said, look, can you just proof it and just give me some pointers? And she read it and she said, oh, you need to do your master's. This is a master's proposal. I went, oh, okay. Anyway, I sent that off to Bathurst Regional Gallery. I got a solo exhibition there. And then I developed it as part of my master's degree. I thought, oh, well, okay, yeah, I'll do it, she says. And off, you know, off I went, applied for my MA. And so I did it as part of that. And it's basically what it is. Firstly, I just wanted to honour the enormous impact that my mother had on my life. Didn't have either of my parents for very long, but it was quite a profound influence. Now, she was an incredibly talented person. You know, as I said before, recited poetry, and she conducted the choir. She had a beautiful voice. She taught herself musical instruments. Never went to school in her life.
Wow!
Because she was in grew up initially in the Soviet Union. Then the family migrated to Iran, where they stayed for about 20 years. My brother and father were both born there.
Wow.
So they always sort of had to get away from, you know, Stalin's purges, essentially.
Wow.
Anyway, so despite that, she was autodidact and a bit of a polymath. Autodidact is someone who can teach themselves.
Oh, right.
So I always found Australian school. I went to Russian school. So Australian school was kind of irrelevant. And most of my education was for my mother. Anyway, I have this collection of what remains of an amazing collection of jewellery, because they, I had documents, old passport photos, IDs, tiny ones, from the Tsarist period and also from the Stalinist period, with the KGB, NKVD stamp. NKVD was the precursor to precursor to the KGB. That was the Stalinist secret police. So I had all these documents. How they survived, I don't know. And I thought, I just got to do something with it. I've got to do something with it. So this was the exhibition.
Yeah. Well, that sort of old ID documentation has a really particular look to it.
Well, and it was actually, it formed the basis of some of the works that I did for the first exhibition. And I had that. It was great. It was called Treasured Layers. And again, I had to come up with the phrase. And once I got this idea of treasured layers, then the I knew what to do with the work, and the imagery came, and it sort of built on from there.
Mm.
A few years later, I thought, well, I've got to pick it up again. It was a very draining kind of exhibition. It was cathartic, joyful, sad, and I had periods when I wept through, you know, the memories.
Yes.
Music played a part. I'm almost tearing up now. And I was actually during the exhibition at Bathurst. I was teaching at Charles Sturt Uni, and I was teaching this layering process. At that time, I used acrylics.
Mm-hmm.
They lend themselves very well to the layers. So anyway, and I was saying to the students, look, this is how I did this exhibition, and I told them the story of the family. I played the music. I had them all in tears. I thought, oh God, no, the class is crying. What am I going to do?
Yeah,
They went to see the exhibition. Everyone loved it.
Yeah.
I had to give it a break. It was not something you can sustain.
Yes.
So I just did, you know, landscapes and whatever. Had a couple more residencies. And then I picked the exhibition up again. I thought, right, I can do it. I can do it again. And this time it was a much bigger show, and it went up to the Redland Museum in Brisbane.
Queensland.
Okay. Wow. And I approached them, because that's where the family eventually settled. We had a farm in Gundale, in that Redland, Wynnum Bay sort of area.
Yeah,
so that was just wonderful. And my brother
like
sort
coming
of went
home.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I was basically again, honouring my family, but this time I extended it to the other family, the Russian families who came from Persia. And I did a lot of photos and passport things. And there's one image which I've worked on. It's an installation of small pieces of Arsha's paper. And they're layered with the imagery and text of all of these families and their documents. And I had a friend in Brisbane who said, oh, look, I'll send you my family documents too. I went, great, you know, I've got all this wealth of stuff. And I think you might find it on an old Instagram or Facebook post.
Okay.
And, so that sort of developed and grew. And, you know, my brother went into overdrive and invite, because he was a member of, I think he was the secretary of the Ethnics Affairs Council.
Oh,
so
wow.
He had the president of the Ethnic Affairs. He just went over. Well, I thought, gee, I hope I get 20 people. We've got 100.
Yeah, fantastic.
That was a big night.
Was that piece separate to the one that's an image of a person?
You went yeah, it is. No, it. That's it. No,
that's the one you're
that's
talking
the
about.
One I'm talking about. Oh, okay. Yeah. So then that person, it's based on the passport photo, my grandfather's passport photo.
Okay.
And but each one is an individual little piece.
Yeah.
And that was what I was really happy with that. I thought, yep, that's a different direction. And then I left it, and a few years later, I approached Lane Cove Gallery mm-hmm. with another friend,
mm-hmm.
Raymond Proctor. We used to have a lot of exhibitions together. She's moved to Wollongong. Miss her. And I redid the whole thing.
Wow.
I actually redid it.
Wow.
And it also picked up... No, that one didn't pick up a prize. There was another work based on the family stories that picked up a Lithgow Contemporary Art Prize a while back. So I redid that, and I felt that that last piece was much stronger. And that really said everything.
That's interesting.
And it honoured all of the Russian yeah. families who, you know, escaped the revolution, the purges. It was their history. It was because they risked their lives to bring us to a safe country. Well, at the moment, I'm wondering.
Where's the safest place?
I grew up listening to the stories of how they survived. Because my mother's father came very close to the firing squad.
Mm.
Very close. Mm. And that was day that he was supposed to face the firing squad, the commander of this area where he was happened to be a friend of his, and he said, Ivan, I can send you through that door, and that's the firing squad.
Goodness.
Or I can send you through that door, and you take your family and you go right now. You don't take anything. They'd already had their jewellery sewed into their clothes.
Okay.
And it was just grabbing that.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of fortunate I've still got some of the jewellery surviving from that.
That's such a moving story.
Yeah. So, and, you know, my mother often told me the story of them crossing the Caucasus Mountains, getting lost, getting separated. The Red Army actually sent a division after them, and they crossed the Persian border.
Goodness me.
And they were, it was just quite sort of frightening.
It sounds like a story that needs to keep being retold.
Yes, yes, because it is a current situation.
Mm, yes,
it's
yes,
still
with what's happening in the world,
absolutely,
yes.
Exactly.
And it sounds like each time you come to it, there's a freshness or there's some other layer you bring to the experience of the remembering.
I don't think I've got the emotional stamina. it's one of those stories where you do it and then you think, oh, my God, I can't. You know,
they need someone to come in and ghostwrite it for you.
Yeah, probably.
Put some stuff down to go with the art.
Oh, it's a Hollywood
put
film. And, you know, sadly that whole generation that endured that, I think there's only my godfather now remaining. He's 94 or something. So his daughter's pumping him for all the information she can.
Yes.
And hopefully recording it. I have told her to record it. So
yes,
we'll see what happens. But I feel happy that it's been there. It's out there in the public domain for people to see.
To see. Yeah. And I'm sure there's a lot of people listening who've also got diverse cultural backgrounds who this would be resonating with as well, having their own stories.
That was the point.
Yeah.
That was the point.
But we're sitting...
The step is always getting it together and
yes.
putting it into
making it into a cohesive story. Yeah, yes, yeah. is that was the hardest one. It had to make sense.
I've got piles of family history stuff collected with the thought of doing something with it.
And it's important.
I've got recordings of my mum before she passed. I've got all the certificates and all the things.
Goodness.
I even got the idea to get old blank paper, reprint the documents on them and all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
But, you know, it's a big pile and it's just the time to get it done. So well done on
doing it.
Getting it done.
It also reminds me, we've had in one of our live podcasts, we had Judith Martinez. I don't know whether you know Judith.
No, I don't.
So she's done a lot of similar stuff. Her background, family background is Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So she's got a lot of stuff from that period. And she's doing her PhD, researching her Spanish background.
Mm-hmm. She was going back, wasn't she? Did she manage?
She did,
She went before this happened.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Before the COVID.
She did. Good. So, look, it's a really fascinating... We've got the privilege of sitting in front of an image of Natasha's the work that we were just describing about the multi-layered portraits.
Mm-hmm.
And where's this one particularly that one exhibited?
This one was the Redland Museum.
Redland Museum.
The Lane Cove one, which was when did we do that one?
We'll find it. We'll put links.
For people who are listening, we'll
put links up for both.
So you can see, because it's actually a very moving image as you look at the compilation of the portraits.
When I rejigged that, reworked it completely for the Lane Cove exhibition, it was even stronger. Because I ejected a few, I moved things around, and the image to me was much, much stronger.
Okay.
And on Instagram and Facebook, I actually posted some details.
Okay.
Each individual little piece. I think I made over 200 individual pieces.
Wow.
Or more. And what I did was when I had completed it, there were quite a few left over because I tossed some and I, it was a, you know, this sort of whole, it came down to aesthetics.
Yeah. Okay.
Which when you're that's trying to combine aesthetics and meaning and, it is a huge job. But those little ones I actually handed out to a few people.
Yeah.
As passport photos.
Wow.
That's your passport.
That's really special.
Now it's just in a box.
In a box at home.
Yeah, in a box at home, because they all come down. So the whole idea behind it was that it had to be portable.
Yeah, of course.
Yes. And I think, that's right, I called the Redland exhibition from Treasured Layers. It became
so you put that together in the gallery?
Yeah, you put it together in the gallery. Everyone, each one of them is numbered with the row and the number.
Right.
Oh, tell me. Yes. Big job, big job.
Wonderful.
No, taking it down is easy, putting it up is...
Of course.
So... Any sort of multicultural organisations out there, if you want to buy it, please.
Yes, well, those who are listening.
But you'd have to put it back together again.
Oh, that's not a problem. Yeah. This time you can do it permanently under Perspex. Just do it permanently onto a board under Perspex. I mean, it can be done. Everything can be done.
Yes.
So,
Look, there's so much we could explore. There's such a vast amount of information in all that you've communicated to us already, Natasha, and it almost warrants three more sessions. But
you've also got a huge amount of work. I was just
yes.
getting down to this.
Prolific is
this
the
image
word, yeah.
is pages and pages of landscapes and drawings.
Yes.
You know,
Well, that's
I mean, you're obviously prolific.
She is very prolific.
Yeah, I suppose I keep telling myself how lazy I am. I'm doing much, much more. And,
don't beat yourself up. I mean, I'll look at you and I'll think, wow.
I work fast. I do work fast.
Yeah. Well, look, there's so much we could explore in there, Natasha. I think that, you know, I'm almost ready to make a date for when we can go play near, because I think I'd learn a lot from you.
Oh, vice versa, actually, I think.
But I did want to sort of ask you about how you've managed with the bushfires and with COVID and how that has affected your practice or whether it has.
It has. The bushfires came too close to us.
Yeah.
So that was a very stressful period of time. And
I had Blackheath.
And I've, you know, the fire came in as five fingers right into the town.
Yeah.
And when I saw how close it was in the town,
yeah,
how we, you know, didn't lose houses is, I still don't understand it. I still can't process it. Mm. But one of the first things I did, I probably inhaled a lot of smoke while I did it, was as soon as possible walk down to Govert's Lee. Right. That was the closest point for me to walk down to and just see it. I had to see it.
Okay.
And then I went and I did a painting called Mustard Skies. For some reason, that whole period brought to mind a poem, Wilfred Owen's poem, Dulce et Decorum Est, where he talks about the gas attack in the trenches in World War One. And the masks, the scrambling, the noise, the smell, the burning, it was like that's what was happening. And so this little painting of Mustard Skies, which is at Gallery 188 at the moment. I did a few based on that. There's some I painted over because they were just meant to be cathartic. But aesthetically, I thought, no, they didn't. You know, so I've sort of painted over them. And I did afterwards go to the end of Hat Hill Road, and I worked a lot with the charcoal that was there.
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, looked at how the tree ferns had fared in places like Mount Wilson. We went to Bell.
Okay.
And then seeing the green shoots come up. Yes. So Sharon Howard at Gallery, at Gangang Gallery, when, you know, we were allowed to, finally said, look, I'm putting an exhibition together. Can you put this work in the exhibition? I went, great, because it was supposed to be at Everglades Gallery, which was cancelled.
Okay.
So National Trust shut their properties.
Yes.
So all of these bushfire paintings, and it was really cathartic to do it. And I wasn't thinking in terms of, oh, you know, I really thought nobody would buy them because they were all dark.
Oh, yes, because it's a reminder of the fire.
But surprisingly, you know, it's quite a few
people
sold,
responded,
which is great.
Yeah.
So thank you to Sharon for allowing us to have this exhibition there.
Yeah.
And there's a few other artists involved as well. And after that, I thought, oh, God, I'm over it. And
when was that? When was that?
Well, that exhibition was in July. I think about June, July. July,
that's,
I think.
Before yours. What,
it probably was the one
before
Timescapes. Yeah.
No, it was Timescapes.
Oh, was it yours?
Yeah,
was
the same.
Yes, I was. I'm sitting here going, I'm sure Colin was talking about it. No, I worked on the video thing.
Yes, I know. I just watched it before I came here.
Oh, great.
Yeah, there's a face and, you know, me walking through. Anyway, yes. So that was that Timescapes exhibition was so good for, I think, for everybody to have a look at it.
Yes.
But the work was actually finished by the end of February, because March I was supposed to go to Tasmania.
Right.
And 2 weeks into that, I had to come home.
That's right.
Oh, that was a big
disappointing
trip. Very, very, So when I got back, Sharon rang me up. No, before then, I sort of thought, oh, God, I'm so over all this doom and gloom. And I looked at the stuff I've got collected in my studio, which is, you know, like a shop, second-hand shop. I thought, I'll just paint what's there. So, you know, I found, I've got all these little vases and, you know, just bits and pieces that used to belong to my parent, my family.
Yes, yes.
And I go for a walk for the hour that you were allowed to go for a walk, and I pick stuff, shove them in there and just paint it. And I thought, let's paint happy.
Yeah.
And colour. I want a bit of colour. And I've had
the
charcoal.
Pomegranates and,
and the persimmons, especially.
Persimmons,
Sharon actually then said, oh, I love what you're doing. I went, good. And she said, come over and paint my persimmons. I've got masses of persimmons on the tree. And I just went through a garden and ended up picking some stuff. And then the flowers and the persimmons. I mean, very decorative and maybe not serious art, but good practice. It's, you know,
not
doing stuff like that's just, well, it's decorative and,
different,
you know, it's not deep and meaningful.
Different for you, but also...
You can't do deep and meaningful all the time.
So,
you drain yourself.
So I'm just, this is a response to the heaviness of the time.
Yeah. And I thought, well, I'm just going to post nice things.
Yeah, okay.
So that's why all the salvias and, you know, the roses and... Yeah,
bright
the colour Persian carpets and,
okay.
you know, odd bits and pieces. And I threw in a little bit of, you know, Russian in the background, you know, Russian text and Persian text.
Yes.
Which I had to practice for my first family, you know, the treasured layers. I practiced writing in Parsi. Yeah, it was fun.
Yes.
But it worked anyway.
I wonder if other people have been feeling that too, that sort of need to lighten the mood by creating work that is more decorative.
Yeah.
It's the best thing for the soul.
Okay.
You know, art is a, you know, whether it's performing or visual art, I think what we're discovering in this period is that it's not just some little activity or entertainment.
Mm.
It's a living, breathing entity that is essential to life.
Oh, wow. Well, there's another quotable quote. Another one to go off to Scott Morrison.
Yeah. I'm going to have a target on my back. But it is.
But it is sort of a natural response anyway, because that's what people wait for after bushfires. They wait for the bloom, for the regrowth.
Oh, yes.
Reassuring.
Yeah,
that nature response.
Because art is the one thing that is so totally creative.
Mm.
And it's the one thing that feeds, to me, it feeds the mind, it feeds the heart, it feeds the soul.
Yeah.
It's beyond economics.
Mm.
It's beyond that.
Yes.
And everyone who tries to reduce everything to an economic equation, I don't think they have a soul. I'd struggle to find one in them. Seriously. I won't name names.
That's a really good name.
We just lost the accountants and lawyers. They just tuned out.
Yes, but how many accountants and lawyers throw it all in and say, I'm just going to write a book. I'm going to write a novel. I'm going to paint.
It's
not the young ones anyway.
ones
who are leaving when they're
They can buy the 53. Paintings. They can buy the paintings. They can support the people who feed
their
soul.
Which is what they
should. Which is the thing. You don't have to make art, but you need to look at it. As Marlene said, you know, people looking at some artworks can change the way you think. Yes. And I think that's the important thing.
Yes. Maybe reminding us of what's really important.
I think people have
really
been reminded.
Yeah.
A lot of people are saying that they have been reminded of what is really essential and important to life, not the big screen TV or the latest car.
Absolutely. It's just depressing watching TV. Considering people are listening to you, Natasha, and hearing your story and hearing your response to the bushfires and this time, is there something you'd like to, some words you'd like to put out there more than what you've put out already? I know you've given us a lot to think.
No, I can't think of anything except...
Is it suggestion? What to do?
Just go to... buy art. Buy a painting.
Buy art if you can.
Encourage
more artists.
Get to exhibitions. It's not that hard.
No, it's not.
There's restrictions. You have to book. You have to make a phone call. But that's not hard.
It's not difficult. I mean, everybody
there's
is
galleries are open.
It,
We've mentioned the Godumbra.
Godumbra's open.
Gallery 188.
We've mentioned Gang Gang you can go to this weekend. The Beauty of the Beast is still on.
Get out there. It's not just
do
about
your soul
the,
a, bit, a lot of good.
Yeah, it's not just about the big commercial, the big public galleries.
Yes.
I mean, they're important, but go to the little ones. Go to the art. Oh, Black Heath Art Society is. We are having our show. We're going ahead with it.
Great.
Okay.
John Shea, if you're listening, I'm promoting it. We had a Zoom meeting last night about how we can promote it. You know, all sorts of COVID protocols, but you can go and see it the weekend of the long weekend in October. So please.
Yeah, well, that's coming up soon. Yes, absolutely.
The thing I've noticed is from patrons who've come out to the galleries afterwards, they're so thankful.
At least
somebody has some exhibitions on.
That's right.
Yes.
The ones I know for our one for Timescapes, it filled. And we had...
I couldn't believe
so
how many
people
were there.
And so many people just thanking us as they left, just saying, this was so wonderful just to get out and see an exhibition.
And I think some of us were sort of a bit worried about the work would be too confronting of a horrible event, but it didn't happen that way at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. They were like, that's... It's there. It is a cathartic thing.
Yes.
Whether you're doing the work yourself or whether someone is viewing the work.
Yes.
Bottling it up inside.
That's right. It's external.
It
gives you an opportunity to respond in a relationship. Yeah.
I did think a lot of the works had that element of hope in them. You know, even though this thing has happened, you know, we're still
Well, just the simple fact that, the simple fact you're producing it is hope in itself, isn't it?
Look, this has been a really hopeful and happy and rich interview, Natasha.
Oh, gosh, thanks.
So, thank you so much for coming and being so open. And she's supercharged, isn't she? This is really interesting conversation.
I can leave it OTT.
It's perfect for
I think my students used to try and put Valium in my, you know, in my water sometimes.
No, it's wonderful. It's very inspiring.
People won't be able to see, but Natasha's hands haven't stopped moving since she arrived.
Yeah, you can thank my mother for that.
That's wonderful. No, that's great. So thank you so much for coming along today.
Thank you for inviting me, because I really missed conversations about art.
Yeah.
This is the other thing.
Yes.
That COVID's made really difficult is not having conversations. And I'm used to talking to students, poor people. I'm sure they're exhausted after half an hour with my class. You know, just not being able to talk to people. So this has been great. Yes. So thank you both, Brad and Wendy.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I hope everybody's enjoying the listening of it too. And we'll have more to come. We haven't got the next ones lined up, but that will come. So because with BMCAN we're trying to do diverse arts media, so it won't all be visual artists, but we've started with visual artists.
There's plenty coming. But I need a break after Natasha. Right? Well done.
We have invited the writer Craig Billingham and also Judith Martinez. So we'll get a few people lined up. Should be a really interesting follow through. And particularly it'd be good to have some more of these sort of rich personal stories, because I think that really helps people reflect on their own life experience.
And have Natasha back, because I want to hear what happens with the exhibition.
Okay.
Yes.
I've got Everglades booked in for next year, so because we had ours cancelled this year, they've sort of slotted us in for May.
So with the Blackheath, where and when?
The Blackheath Art Society Studios in Station Street, Blackheath. There'll be big signs on the highway.
Catch a train. The traffic.
Yeah, catch the train. Yes. Look, we're actually we hear that we're going to have a lot of visitors up in the mountains for the long weekend.
Right.
So it's the long weekend. So catch a train, and you just get off the train, walk straight virtually into the studios. Mm-hmm. Yes, the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So and I'll actually have a couple of. I'm hoping. I'm out curating it as well.
Okay. Ah, brilliant.
And fantastic. We're going to see how we can fit it all in. But, so I'll put two of my bushfire works in there.
Great.
Because everything else is drawing. I haven't even framed it yet. Uh-huh. All the latest landscape stuff. Anyway, come along. It's going to be wonderful. Support the arts.
That's it.
Yep.
have an art weekend.
Good.
Up to Blackheath, stay the night, out to Lithgow the next day.
Yes. Gang Gallery, Gallery 188, Lost Bear Gallery in Katoomba, and
they're all open.
Rex Livingston. Yeah, so do the gallery trip.
Come and see
And the Kadumba.
And the Kadumba, which opens this Saturday.
Yes.
It'll
be the last weekend of the Kadumba, so make sure you get there.
You must do that. And your Instagram account is called?
Natasha Daniloff Artist. I know it's too long.
Okay, Natasha Daniloff Artist. On Instagram, check her work out there, and her website, which is natashadaniloff.com.au. All right, did you get that? We'll put it up on the website anyway.
Of course we will.
Talkingarts.com.au.
Brilliant. Slash podcasts.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Wendy. Thanks, Natasha.
Thank you.
Talking Arts is an initiative of the Blue Mountains Creative Arts Network and is in partnership with Radio Blue Mountains program Art House every Thursday nights at 6 p.m. If you'd like to hear more Talking Arts podcasts as they are put online, you can go to talkingarts.com.au podcasts and you'll find the latest ones there.